beams. We've hijacked the CIA's orbital mind control laser to beam the pirate signal of protest.
That's what they want us to
into
do.
Your frontal cortex.
That's funny.
And tell you that you are free.
Ew.
Hey, we're all hackers here. We know these things. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a bit cut. No government license. This allows reuse by anyone except for governments. Learn more at bitcot.org. Can you guys feel it tonight?
Yeah.
Jeremy, can you feel it?
I feel it. I'm feeling something. I thought it was heartburn.
Through the allergy. It's allergy. This is, the couple weeks before my birthday are the worst time every year of my life, allergy-wise, no matter where I live. And here we have, also have weird things like I'm actually... literally, as the kids say, but in the proper use, not like the kids say, I am literally allergic to tumbleweed pollen. And they that here. And they also have cottonwoods, and this time of year in this town, it looks like it's snowing some days, like a river of fluff floating gently through the air down the street. It's kind of like dandelion fluff, but it's from a tree, so there's a lot more of it.
Yeah.
You guys ever see that?
Yeah. I forget that badly. I forget the tree that we have here. It's not cottonwood, obviously, but it gets
maple.
Maples
were my bane when I lived in upstate New York.
They kick off green dust that looks like the cottonwood stuff, except it's green and that covers everything. So we've been dealing with that.
It makes cars sticky and stuff. That's oaks and maples.
I think that's what it is. But it's crazy because like some streets you won't see it at all, and other streets both sides are lined. Like when the cars move, you can actually see the outlines of the cars because the entire side. Both sides of the streets are just covered in this green garbage.
Wow.
Wow, that is so gross.
Yeah, it is.
Are you abnormal or are you tolerant to things that are in the world?
Oh, me? No, I have strange allergies. But I've never had to deal with something like that where it looks like God's snot all over the street. But I am allergic to cats, for one, but... as far as plant allergies,
isn't that
I'm
like against the fiend bylaws to be allergic to cats?
Only if you have. It's not against the fiend bylaws if you have them anyway, like me.
Oh yeah, see there you
mildly,
go.
Mildly allergic to cats. Like on the scratch tests, I do barely react to that, but I do react to that. But
I actually
it's
had
probably
to.
Part of the reason I always have a stuffy nose. But go on.
Yeah, I have a similar issue. I got a cat when I was in college, and I had to give her to my father because she was actually making me sick every week or two. It was really bad.
Wow.
Nice. Nice, but wow. Sorry, my appropriate canned reaction. I pressed the wrong button. Wow.
But nice. I am allergic to pigweed. I have no idea what it is.
I was going to say, I've never even heard of that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know.
So how do you even know if you're near it if you don't know what it is?
I guess I die.
Scratched
I don't
him
know.
And told him probably. Yeah. Did you learn that from a scratch test?
Yeah, it was just from a scratch test at a ENT or allergist or whatever. It's been a while.
Yeah,
I've never actually had one of those done. But I know I have
it's
some
horrible.
I have some weird allergies that I didn't. It
think
wasn't
about.
It wasn't until later in my
think
life.
About what it. Think what? About what an allergy scratch test is. They make you lie on your belly, and then draw grids on your back with a magic marker or tape, and then scratch you, which hurts, and then push toxin into the scratch marks.
Wow, that sounds super pleasant.
And then they take a little thing that's got different circles on it and measure the size of the circles. And then I was doing allergy tests for a while, and what they did was, based on that, they mix up the toxins you're most allergic to and inject increasing amounts of them once a week at first, and then after a few months it's every other week, and it's supposed to be every other week for the rest of your life. And recently I said, no way, this is, it's not helping, and it's expensive and it's just horrible. I don't like it. So F it. We'll do it live.
Yeah. Pay us a whole bunch of money to poison you slightly for the rest of your life.
Yeah. It's not even really that much with insurance, but
if it's not helping at all, then what's the point?
Yeah. And after a year it wasn't helping,
Well, cause
it's just,
What's the goal? To desensitize you to it, essentially?
Yeah. 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 And they were also getting to the point where they were about to ramp me up to like the highest dose I'd ever have and then keep me on that forever. And the, you know, there's probably five tiers that they go through of amounts.
And you're going to be on the seventh.
I went to the fourth. Yeah, I went to the fourth one and, you know, like just quit out of disgust before I got to the fifth one. Cause the fourth one, like, it makes you ill, you know, you have an allergic reaction, like for a day or at least for like 12 hours, you know, you feel allergic. There's a big puffy mark on your arm. They inject three injections each time, two in one arm, one in the other, alternating. And, yeah, you feel like you have a flu for like 12 hours after getting one. It's really horrible.
Yeah, that sounds miserable.
And then combined with if you actually have allergies that day to something environmental, it's like being sick. It's bad.
Yeah,
it sounds like voodoo too.
Fever.
I mean, it's kind of like vaccines every week. You know, it's a weird theory.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, desensitizing.
It's medically accepted, but there's a lot of debate as to whether it works. And it doesn't work with everybody. I don't think it's working with me.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be successful with everybody. But it just type of stuff always makes me think of, what is it, The Princess Bride, when Wesley talks about how he, you know, got himself immune to ketamine powder. Just keep giving it to yourself. Keep giving yourself poison until you're immune to it.
Oh yeah, that was a thing back in the days of if you thought you were going to be poisoned, to take little bits of poison. But you'd have to do it for every poison. But I know that snake handlers do that sometimes. You know, people, not like ones in the circus, but people who milk snakes for venom and or work in snake farms.
Yeah, they let themselves get bit. You know, and quickly.
Yeah, or even start with some of the venom and inject it under the skin. You know, like way less than a bite would be.
Yeah.
Over time and work up to it, but. You also have to do that for specific snakes, too.
That's true.
You don't want to get bit by a rare snake, too, because the antivenoms that most hospitals have, especially in not huge cities, they have them for like three or four snakes, but not all of them. And it's like $100,000 to get injected with antivenom for a snake.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's no fun.
I don't know why, but it's weird. So I got some good news. We're gonna have a new fiend. It's John Vibes. You know John Vibes, right?
Yes, Jeremy? I know John Vibes. Yeah. Yes, it's very exciting.
I do not. Sorry.
Ugh.
Yep.
Where have you been, Phil?
Yep. John's a good friend of mine. Know him in person. Been talking to him for a long time. He's been a fiend fan since it was just Nima Vidati and I. And yeah, he's great. I dig him. He's up all night anyway. He's just one of those people and works at home. So why not? And, you know, I have a funny story about meeting him, and it sounds horrible, but I've told him this, and he thinks it's hilarious. So he came up to me at Pork Fest 3 or 4 years ago when I was there, when I showed Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. And I think it's 4 or 5 years now, and when I watched it with a crowd of people, I hadn't watched it since we made it, 4 or 5 years earlier. And I watched it. I was like, man, there's so much minarchist statism in this. And like watching it and then on the plane home in my head and writing on paper, I wrote the director's cut for it. And when I got home, like went to sleep and then got up and started chopping. And I chopped the like 99-minute version down to 77 minutes. And that's called Guns, Weed, and Anarchy, The Road to Freedom. It's on YouTube. And there's also...
That was the first version I saw.
Yeah, there's also a cut. Like, everything I cut, I made into a YouTube video also. That's pretty special.
That I don't think I've seen that. I don't think I've seen the cutouts, but the first version, the very first time I saw it was that version. And then I went back and saw the original after that.
The cutouts are linked in the YouTube video for Guns, Weed, and Anarchy, and they're also listed on the website Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. That's a fun little, 25, 30 minute, whatever, watch of like, ugh, man, how was this ever cool?
Did I really say these things?
It wasn't me saying it. It was interviewees mostly. Like, well, we need to get back to the Constitution and get the right people in there, and everything will be fine.
I'm like, yeah, but you weren't challenging them on it. You're just like, okay.
Well,
I'll have to find those because I think I only saw the cut version.
Oh, it's fun. It's real. The stuff cut from it is really fun. It's well, Nima was an anarchist, an anarcho-capitalist, voluntarist, and I was a deep minarchist. You know, like. And we're going to talk about that later tonight, about what we used to be like and what happened and what it's like now, as they say in an AA share. You know, and I once heard a screenwriter, a famous screenwriter, speak at an AA meeting, and he's like, okay, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. All right, basic three-act format. I can do this. But, yeah, we're going to talk later about crazy things we used to say, like, only the government should have guns. You know, only police and the military, and just how horrible we used to be and what changed. It's gonna be a good thing. I think I'm gonna do that with every fiend at some point. So let's see, a couple other quick announcements here. There's a Fiends Digest. I'm gonna mention this every show for a while. It's digest.freedomfiends.com, and it's 20 minute best ofs of every episode. Riley Blake makes them. They're great. He's the guy that does the Free Talk Live digests. And if you really don't have a lot of time, it's the highlights of each show. And if you go on Stitcher, we're on Stitcher and we got an iTunes for it now. But if you go on Stitcher, there's a button on Stitcher to listen at 1.25 speed or 1.5 or 2 speed. 2 speed sounds ridiculous. 1.5 speed is listenable, but if you're really in a hurry and only have 13 minutes, use that. But I recommend the 1.25 speed. It almost doesn't sound sped up. I mean, it doesn't change the pitch on any of them, but it almost sounds, the 1.25 speed basically, and that's, I think, 16 minutes to listen, and it basically sounds like we're a daytime morning show instead of a late night show. You know, like everybody's just a little more energy.
I was going to say, everybody's just a little bit more peppy.
Yeah, so I recommend trying that. And I really recommend Cell 411, which is a program that Jeremy should have used recently, and we can't talk about that. But I think if he had that, things would be different, where you can now broadcast what's happening and call friends to you and send them your GPS all with a button. And
yes,
people cannot destroy your phone. They can, but it won't destroy the footage you've already filmed. It's on the server. Cell 411, get it. It's free.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Cell 411 is a free app for Android and iOS that replaces government-controlled 911. Cell 411 allows you to preset a group of friends or private organizations to show up in any emergency. Cell 411 is a nightmare for the state because it proves their so-called services aren't needed. Cell 411 has had thousands of installs, and of course it's covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. Cell 411 because your friends won't shoot you when you're in trouble. Without the government, who would build the emergency services? You and Cell 411. Get it today at getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You'll never know what we're talking about. Yeah, unless you go to the Patreon, but I'm actually not recording the behind the scenes today. Because I just ran in hose newsled. That's what I call it when I do this kind of neti pot thing. It's not a neti pot, but it's a squeeze bottle that you like basically have this kind of saline solution and use distilled water, heat it up, and you push it up your nose. It's kind of like waterboarding.
Yeah.
Self-waterboarding.
That is not what hose nuzzling sounds like to me.
Does that sound like something nice, hose nuzzling?
It sounds like something quite different than a neti pot.
It's a hose noozle. Nuzzle sounds a little nicer, but no. Uh-huh. Yeah, this is horrible. But I just ran and did that. So, Jeremy, did you get your clock fixed? Is it correct? Is it on government time?
No, I didn't get it. I'm afraid to do things while we're doing this show. But yeah, apparently my computer's more anarchist than me because every time it updates, it kicks the government time off.
Because you set it to government time. Yeah. You know, you can set it to government time. You can set it to Microsoft time. There's other times you can set it to. Yeah. Those are the two top ones. But I find that the government time is more accurate. which is weird. And it's really the only thing the government's useful for is, you know, they run that clock in, where is it, Colorado? Where
somewhere in Colorado, yeah.
International time reference for North America. That's why I can use this this wireless clock that updates, and it's always seconds. It's always on to the millisecond, but it doesn't work back east.
That's true. Mine is always about. I have one of those too. That you know, you actually sent me that, and it's been it's always about 10 seconds off.
What are you gonna say, Phil?
Well, it's well, you said it was weird that the government time is the most accurate, but it's kind of like how insurance. How more people had insurance after Obamacare. Well, of course they did because they were forced to buy it. So it's kind of like the same thing, because if the government is dictating what time it is, of course they're going to be the most accurate.
I could get kind of groovy and hippie and say, like, how do you know what's the right time? But it's based on
time's weird, just an illusion, math, man.
Based on
doesn't really planets. Exist.
Yeah. Yeah. So God, I really don't want to get right into this, how we used to be horrible statists, but we'll get there, and I got to work up to it. I got two more announcements. There's a Roku channel for the Freedom Fiends now, and there's a Roku channel for my streaming network, cussfreeliberty.org.
I'm going to have to check those out. I have a Roku. I use it for very limited things, but I don't actually check extra channels, but I'm going to have to go check that tonight.
Yeah, and the Freedom Fiends one, the code to add that is Fiends, F-E-E-N-S. Maybe it's Fiend. No, I think it's Fiends. And the code to add cuss-free liberty is no cuss.
No cuss.
And it's, you know, they're audio only. They're a random feed. The cuss-free liberty one is about 12 shows. I just added Shane Radliff's show now that they have gone cuss-free, which is cool.
Nice.
The new one or is Liberty Under Attack?
Yeah, Liberty Under Attack. No, the new one is too esoteric for this, I think.
It might be. I really dig it though, the Vanu.
This is for a general audience. This is for a general audience, and you know, few people are running radio from it, and also it's to like bring in, you know, it's to bring in the people in the cheap seats, basically. The people that just want to know why they shouldn't love the government without a lot of, you know, esotericness. It's got good stuff though. It's got good shows, and I play everything in a random feed, but I also update, so from like Friday till Tuesday it's all new shows from the previous week, and then during the week it's, you know, everything together replayed. So nice. It's fun. Yeah, so check those out, they're free. And the Freedom Fiends one is a random feed of every episode we've ever done. So, like, you're listening.
Oh,
you
might just going to ask that. That's awesome.
Yeah, you might hear yesterday's show followed by, you know, our first show over 1,000 episodes ago. So, that's kind of fun. NEMA a lot.
That'll be very useful for me, because I use the random 24/7 one on the Android app all the time when I don't have podcasts to listen to, and I like to fall asleep to listening to something. I usually put the TV on, but I don't watch it. But this will be even better. I'll just throw that on.
That's how you brainwash yourself, people. Everyone should do that. Everyone should put on the Freedom Fiends feed on Roku and keep it on quietly.
That's how I memorized Brutus's soliloquy. Was it the soliloquy? No. Whatchamacallit? For Caesar. No, Brutus. Yeah, but Brutus's, what's the word? Eulogy for Caesar. Like the million page thing. I memorized that entire thing.
I come not to praise liberty, but to bury it. That thing.
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. I did that. I listened to it in my sleep for a week straight, and that's how I memorized it for a project for class.
Meow.
Works wonders. Yeah.
Everyone louder than everyone else, in the immortal words of John Lord, yelling into the on the album, Made in China, Made in Japan, Deep Purple.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
I love the Freedom Fiends. But in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
I don't know how anyone can be that excited with what's coming next. Meow.
This is going to be embarrassing.
No, this is going to be good. This is going to be good, Liberty, because most people, we're going to confess our sins and then say 30 L Rothbards and be cleansed.
Joint therapy
I'm
session.
I'm kidding.
It'll be good.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's why we, that's why I don't need a shrink, because I have a microphone. I just, you know, the world is my shrink. Although I don't really want feedback from the world. I just tell it my problems and then disable comments.
Well, that's okay. If the world was a shrink, all it would say is, what do you think? Anyway.
I know. You know, there's a one of the first things to pass the Turing test, and for people to know, the Turing test is, it was a goal of computing in, you know, the 50s and 60s and 70s, and it still is, of like, can interfacing with this computer system convince someone there's an actual person on the other side? And there's a computer game that's text only that's from the 60s. You can actually find an emulator for Windows, but it's called Eliza. The Eliza Therapist, I believe. If you Google that, you'll find the emulator. And it's, you know, it opens up a little text window. And this was something that was written on, like, you know, mainframe computers in the 60s. And there's also a Wikipedia page for it. We should probably find that and link it. But it's a fake therapist. And it's not a person. It's a computer. And it probably has, like, 30 or 40 types of things it can ask you. And it also can take your answer and put it in, you know, like, you know, if your answer is, well, it was my parents, then the thing says, well, tell me more about your parents. And it's frighteningly believable for about 10 to 15 rounds. And then you can, you know, questions, and then you're like, all right, it's kind of repeating itself and I could tell it's a machine. But it was one of the first things that passed the Turing test. And yeah,
it's like a text game where it's just a whole bunch of if-then statements,
yeah,
one after another in loops. Yeah,
have you done that, Phil?
Text game or Eliza?
The Eliza.
No, I haven't.
Yeah.
No, I was just
I'll find it.
Mentioning from how you were describing it.
Yep. So we don't need that. We need each other, and we're going to talk about what it was like before liberty in our lives. What happened to
the
bring
sins
us
of
liberty.
Our statism.
Yes, and what it's like now, the redemption in the third act in each story. And this kind of starts with, does anyone want to start besides me, or should I just start it? What do you think?
I think you can start. Yeah.
All right. So in my life, these three statements, phrases, have come out of my mouth with conviction. About 11 or 12 years ago, I said to my wife in the first year we knew each other, before we were married even, we were discussing, you know, it was back when it was a theory the government was spying on everyone, but, you know, we didn't have the documents. And I said, and I quote, I don't care if the government spies on me. I have nothing to hide. And I would find that an absurd statement right now. And about 30 years ago, that's 30 years ago, and I'm 50, I'll be 53 this month. So, you know, when I was 20, 21, 22, 23, I said, only police and the military should have guns, which is an absurd statement that I would question anyone who said it now. And 43 years ago, when I was 9 or 10, I said, Dad, I'm a communist. And I used to wear a Chairman Mao hat, even though I'd never read Mao and was probably just emulating John Lennon. You know, I have an interesting, like, this is something a lot of people would keep private. And this is why we're doing this, because a lot of shows pretend that they, you know, they came out of the womb believing everything they believe now. And we want to talk about how it was a journey, and because I think that's useful to people in the audience. I've talked about this before, about how it's good to admit the status sins of your past, because it's kind of like in AA. Like in AA, they say, you know, the idea of one alcoholic helping another, because your whole life, if you're an alcoholic, you've had, you know, friends, families, judges, wives, husbands pointing a finger down at you and saying, you need to fix yourself. And you're like, F you. But in AA, it's like someone like you who's a peer, not looking down at you or not begging up at you, but looking across the table saying, I was like you, here's how I changed. You know, so we want to kind of be the status anonymous, as Ben Stone and I would say, for the audience. I do have one little weird thing about John Lennon, though, is I wept for his death this past week, which sounds bizarre because it was many, many, many early 80s, was it? Anyone remember? Anyone
81?
Yeah, sounds right.
I think somewhere it was 84, because I want to say he died on the year that I was born.
Nope, he didn't, because I was still at Church Farm School when it happened, because I remember getting in an argument with our cottage master, because I wanted to have him pull the flag down to half-mast to honor John Lennon. And, you know, what he was really thinking was, I will die before I lower my flag for that filthy hippie. But what he said in his excuse, which kind of made sense, was he wasn't an American. We don't lower the flag for non-Americans. But when it happened, I cried. Sorry. I mean, and didn't it happen the same day as some other thing? It was that it totally eclipsed. It was, it happened the day that the announcement came that the singer in the Germs died, right? Remember that from the movie?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. It
was
December 8th,
Darby Crash died. He died the day before, but they didn't find the body till the next day and announce it in the paper. And so, like, you know, it was totally dwarfed by that. Yeah. But I was reading about him the other day, falling down wormholes, and I rarely cry. I mean, I don't cry when friends and family die. I don't immediately cry, which sounds really callous. It usually takes me months to cry, I can cry easily when other people die. Like, I cried when Kurt Cobain died, but it was less. It was more like I saw myself in him, because I was in a band that was crashing and burning and getting kicked off a major label. And, he was a fan of my band, and, you know, I knew people in that band. So I felt some connection. And, like, the real thing was, like, my mother told me, like, I just saw this thing on TV, Michael, about this guy from Nirvana, this band, and he just died of heroin, and he looks like you, and I don't want this to happen to you, and I know you're doing drugs, and you need to stop, you know. And it was kind of a wake-up call. And it was, like, it took a year to get clean after that, but it really shook me up, but more, you know, from a personal thing. But with John Lennon, like, I kind of idolized him as a kid, which is sounds bizarre and crazy to a lot of people. But, you know, the Beatles were like the first music that I listened to that really just, like, reached in my heart and brain and grabbed me and shook me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty young, like, you know, 10 or 11. It was after they broke up, I think. But, yeah, so I listened to the song, I read the news today, oh boy. What's that song? A Day in the Life. And I just started weeping the other day with, like, you know, tears rolling down my face into my chest and onto my legs. I mean, it was that much. And it was, part of it was kind of like because of him, and part of it was like, you know, just it really hitting me, like, you know, I'm not dying every day anymore, and I'm not miserable every day anymore. I'm still pretty sick, but, and it comes and goes, but, you know, I'm not where I was a year ago, and I'm really grateful for it. And, you know, kind of, it was a hard won battle. Like, I really, you know, did everything the doctors told me to that made sense, didn't do the things they didn't, got second opinions, read up on stuff, and, like, you know, did things religiously, like everything I was supposed to do that's kind of hard to do, like wearing CPAP so I can breathe at night. I hated that at first, but I did it. I've done it every day. I just doing it, it just hit me. But really, it's like John Lennon, who was kind of one of those, you know, millionaire communists that are so hilarious. But yeah, but I emulated him, and I didn't understand communism. And here's where the
that's okay. Most communists don't understand communism. Yeah, so they keep asking for it.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, I'd never read Mao. Like, I wore a Chairman Mao hat, and I told my dad I was a communist. My wife told her dad she was a communist when she was a kid too, and then, you know, it was to irk our dads, who were, you know, inveterate capitalists, and. But I think her dad just basically said, here, read this, and handed her The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Heinlein, and she read it, and it changed her. But it took me a lot longer than that. So the thing about saying I'm a communist is, and I would say this for anybody who's listening to the radio who thinks communism is a good idea, communism ends in the death of the enemy of communism. Like, you can't be against communism in communism. Invariably, they kill you or throw you in a gulag, first of all. Second of all, it sounds good to children, which I've heard libertarianism accused of. Like, you know, and suddenly there's this huge groundswell of a lot of people coming into liberty, you know, probably because of like kind of a network effect I think Phil talked about with the internet when he was making fun of Larkin Rose's bad statistics. But really, like, everybody, there's so many libertarians now, and it's great, but it's also kind of like a lot of them. I kind of think you really can't be a libertarian until you've supported yourself, and that's I've been argued with on that. Until you've supported yourself and kept doing it, like, yeah, maybe you went out and had a job in an apartment for a couple of years, but then had to go back home, unless it's like someone died or you were taking care of someone or you had a, you know, major issue. If you can't just go out and support yourself with, you know, little or no help, I think you really don't understand the free market. And, you know, when I said this to my dad at 10 years old, I certainly hadn't supported myself. So, what do you guys think about the dad, I'm a communist? What did you say, Phil?
Well, I wasn't speaking to my dad. I was in my first year of college at UCF. This is the first time I tried college.
UCF's University.
University of Central Florida.
Ah.
Yeah, it's kind of like the ASU of Florida. But
I don't know what ASU is. Is that a sports reference or a...
Oh, no. Arizona State University is the...
The party school.
Yeah, it's the school that all the strippers go to that are supporting their schooling.
But that's not... University of Phoenix is something else. That's an online university that's not online. Phoenix, right?
Yeah, no.
Right.
Arizona State is always ranked as in, like, the top, like, five party schools, like, for, like, decades now.
It's the Chino, big... Chino or Chico? What's the one north of San Francisco? That's always one. Chico? Yeah.
I don't know.
So you're going to a party school.
Yeah, so I was going to school for the first time. I was in an argument with a roommate of mine, and I've always been a big Trekkie, so that's a little bit of the background. But
Star Trek is communist. I mean, it's very statist. It's the Federation. It's that kind of libertarian of that sci-fi. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Gene Roddenberry was a full-on socialist, I think.
Meow.
Yeah.
All right. We come back. We're gonna go straight to Phil and hear all the dirt and say 20 Hail Rothbards.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
So I realized yeah. what I was thinking of, who died in 1984. It was actually
Joy Division.
Paul Dirac.
Who?
Physicist.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, no, I'm kidding. Follow the deaths of physicists.
Yeah, no, it was I believe MLK's father or something. But
yeah, the last physicist I was aware of the death of was Albert Einstein before I was born. So I don't keep up on that, but I can understand why you would.
Yeah. True communism has never been tried, right?
You said that, huh?
Yeah, that's what I said.
And by that, did you mean that's why it's always been a failure? If we just get the right people in there, we can make it work? Is that what young Phil thought?
It was sort of like that. It was one of those things, again, I did not really understand communism. What I understood of communism was basically from watching Star Trek my entire life. And I was in an argument with my roommate at the time, and he's like, communism always fails. It always goes badly. And I responded with the typical commie idiotic remark. True Which communism has never been tried.
Is that from Star Trek?
No.
What was your connection with Star Trek in this? Tell me how.
Because Star Trek is the society that communists think will come about from communism. Essentially,
which is kind of like the Zeitgeist movement. Yeah, which is why you were into that. But we'll talk about that later. Yeah. So, communism makes sense to children. I started saying it before, but never really explained it. But children and young people who've never worked to put food in their mouth, entirely to put food in their mouth, it sounds fair. That's what it is. It sounds fair to children. You know, when you read about people who have many billions with a B of dollars, and there are people starving outside your window, like there are in most major cities too, or you're seeing it on the news if otherwise, it just makes sense. And really, I mean, I think that you can't be a multi-billionaire, certainly without working with the state at this point. But I think that a lot of the reasons a lot of billionaires exist would not exist in a totally free market, because they're using things like, patent protections, which that's a whole other show, but they're kind of absurd, at least especially for the lengths that they have them and the ways that they have them. They kill innovation. And government picking winners and losers, and people in their industry like writing their own, basically writing the law so it favors them and not other people. Like, big companies often welcome more regulation because they have the money and the resources to meet it, and the little guys and medium guys don't, and it knocks out the competition.
Every few years it seems they take old Walt Disney's head out of the freezer just so he can argue for a longer IP.
I hate that man. I so hate
That's funny.
That man.
Yeah, he's...
And his head is in a freezer, right? So they say.
That's the rumor. I never saw it.
I think we should take it out and play soccer with it.
That was back before you could... If this were Free Talk Live, Mark Edge would be giving a live read right now, because you know that... He is signed up with the one company in America that will freeze your head. When Mark Edge dies, and the way he does it is you have an insurance policy that you keep up, and you make it out to the company, and when you die, they take the money and send somebody to your, to your doctor or to your morgue, the morgue, and they cut your head off. And we're here for the Okay, that's the show title right there. And I want to find a picture from Futurama of Richard Nixon's head. All right? You like
that? We're here for your head. No, just the head. Perfect. No. You can keep the rest of it.
Walt Disney's head? Let's find a picture of that. Yeah. Hey, we're here for the head.
Can you say that on radio?
Yeah,
I didn't even think about that.
So you got a little bit more on how Star Trek made you a communist, and
well, Star Trek didn't later itself make me a communist, but it was all
Gene Roddenberry's fault.
Huh? Oh yeah,
it wasn't Star Trek; it was Gene Roddenberry. It was all
Gene Roddenberry. But I was essentially raised kind of to with no real exposure to capitalistic thinking.
Wow, are your parents hippies?
No, my well, I shouldn't say no exposure, but I was raised by my father, and he kind of kept that away from me in certain ways. It's more complicated than I can explain in 25 seconds. So,
all right. Yeah.
We'll pick this up in the second hour.
Yep.
Worms.
And we'll welcome Belle Fouche.
Belle Fouche.
How dare you, sir?
I found the perfect picture for a reader for the head.
Special. You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this. And we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today. Because you inspire joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
Broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah.
So we are back for the second hour. I am murdered up.
What are we talking about?
Oh, yes. Well, first of all, hey, welcome. Hello, Belle Fouche.
Belle Fouche.
We are here.
Sundance.
Yes,
I have to say.
At Sundance.
Yeah, I have to say the word Belle Fouche at least once per episode, just because it's such a fun word. Belle Fouche.
It is my favorite town to say.
Yeah.
So I got some news. Fang, one of the bands we've talked about in the show, was just signed a new record deal with Die Laughing Records. That's kind of cool.
Congrats.
Very nice.
And
yes.
It's not a music show, generally. So what else we got? We're talking about stuff and things. I got my announcements, though. So my second hour announcements. Use Cell 411.
Yes.
It's a free app. You can add on your Android phone, or if you're one of the beautiful people, your iPhone for free. And it allows you to set up a cell of friends you trust and be able to call them with one button if you need help. You know, you can set up for, there's a little circle wheel, and you can pick the thing on the circle wheel on the front of what you want. You know, if you want to send a I've broken down and need help, or I've been detained by the police and need witnesses, or, you know, I think there's a specific one for being arrested.
There's two different cop ones, one for being pulled over, one for being arrested. And
there's one for need medical emergent help. There's one for, you know, I'm being bullied. I like that they added that, and that'd be great for kids, you know. Because you could have parents and older kids around that you could call immediately. You know, the government tries to do all these things like, we're going to have education to stop bullying. You're never going to stop bullying, and you're never going to stop it in schools as long as you have to put everyone of the same age from the same geographic region in the same room. That's just not the way to teach. But I like that. What are you going to say?
The only thing these anti-bully things have done have switched the demographic of the bullies.
And what?
Allowed them to play victim. So it's just switched it to where the demographic that would have otherwise been bullied in the past is now doing the bullying, but now they can play victim.
Explain that. I don't really get what you're saying. I think I do, but if I don't, the audience might not. So go
ahead.
Well,
it's a social justice thing. I mean, for example, there was this video that went viral a while ago that of this girl that was basically threatening to cut a guy's hair because he had dreads and he was white and she was black.
Wow.
And that was cultural appropriation.
Oh, yeah, man.
Stuff like that.
Well, you know, using a toilet is cultural appropriation, indoor plumbing, because it was invented by the British.
Wow. How dare we?
I know. But yeah, I see what you mean. You know, a friend of mine who, ironically, is an inveterate liberal, but probably one of the good ones, my friend Michael Barabé, who we've mentioned on the show, he's an English professor at Penn State, and he had the interesting position of being the head of the Joe Paterno chair at Penn State.
Oh, that's right.
Until they dissolved it for reasons that, they dissolved it. Although our Steve Miller said that he believes that probably Paterno was innocent, which is possible, but not the other guy. Probably. But yeah, and he wrote this book called Life as We Know It, which is a book about, you know, one of his kids is, as they say, differently abled. And he wrote a book about, you know, dealing with the interesting problems that come with that medically and socially and financially. And it's a great book until it just turns into a screed for single payer health care about halfway through. This is a book from the 90s. Yeah. But he said to me one time, he used to be the drummer in my band Baby Opaque in Charlottesville when he was, and we're going to talk about Charlottesville, when he was a professor, an untenured professor at the time at the University of Virginia before he moved on up to being a tenured professor at Penn State. He said, there are two kinds of bullies in this world, the kind that knock your lunch tray out of your hand, and the kind that knock their own lunch tray out of their hand and start screaming that you hit them.
Yep.
That's the kind Phil's talking about, right?
Yep.
Yeah,
that would absolutely be that.
Yeah. And, you know, it'd be kind of interesting for those people to have Cell 411 because they could probably use it to bring other bullies, but unless they edited the footage would show what actually happened. Although sometimes, you know, the camera comes on after an event that people dispute. That's pretty common. It's pretty common for, you know, most people aren't filming all the time to where if someone comes up and punches them, they have it on camera. It's usually,
the aftermath.
You know, someone punches somebody and people pull out their cameras. So
yeah.
People can lie. Yeah. Well, sure, there should be a feature on Cell 411 that, like, constantly records and then deletes it like a minute, you know, as it goes. Yeah, you can roll back to before, you know.
Sure.
There you go. There you go, Virgil.
There you go. Yeah, get on that, Virgil.
Yeah. So we are the Freedom Fiends have a digest. It's at digest.freedomfiends.com. It's great. Check it out if you want to listen to shorter versions of the best parts of these ramble fests we have nightly. It's also on iTunes and Stitcher. Did we have any other announcements? Oh, yeah, we're on Roku with Freedom Fiends Roku channel, and there's a cussfreeliberty.org Roku channel, which are both basically like 24/7 streaming kind of random feed radio stations that, you know, you can sleep with it on low and brainwash yourself or your spouse. Hey, that'd be, I wonder if that'd be grounds for divorce in some states. Like, and he put on these libertarian shows really quiet while I slept and didn't know. And now I think taxation is theft. So, we're talking about the sins of our past. Yeah. We're talking about the sins of our past, about how we used to say stupid things. And I started by saying that at one time, 43 years ago, when I was a child, I said to my dad, Dad, I'm a communist. And that was really just a combination of trying to shock Dad and also not understanding communism like most people don't and thinking it's just sharing. What was the meme I made, Phil, of something you said about sharing that was great?
Sharing is not communism and communism is not sharing.
That's it. And we already used that, unfortunately, for a show title. So we're going with I'm well, here for the head.
We're here for the head.
Yeah, which is, you have to listen to the first hour if you're just joining us in Belle Fouche, and it's about Richard Nixon. It's not anything dirty. So Richard Nixon's frozen head. All right, so Phil, you got cut off by, you got clock blocked in the last hour. You're talking about how you once said, true communism has never been tried, implying it can work if we get the right people in there, right? Did you have more on that?
Not really. So I was getting into how I was essentially raised pretty left liberal, but not like social justice liberal. It was
old school liberal.
Yeah, the like 90s liberal. But so when I got out, I tended a little bit further because, you know, when you're young, when you're in high school or just out of high school, you have this sort of concept going like, man, I want to be a radical. I want to be a revolutionary or whatever, because you have that stupid young person thing. And so I decided to go full communist or full potato. That hadn't been conceptualized at the time, but and my idea, my thinking of it was, well, abolish all money, because they did it in Star Trek. It worked there.
They had credits, so, though, didn't they, in Star Trek?
Not really. They kind of established a little bit of weird stuff. They had alien money, and they used money in these alien cultures. But
that's one of Roger Ebert's rules of screenwriting. He's got a whole book of this, of like, you know, cliches that are true because, you know, they're cliches because they're mostly true. And one is that in any movie that takes place in the future, the money system will be called credits, no matter if it's a different galaxy. It's always credits in the future.
Yeah.
Which is really just run out foretelling of new Bitcoin. Things to call it.
Although Star Trek did have the unique name of gold pressed latinum for their Ferengi money. So,
you know, I mean, there's something to be said for, in a sense, for the idea of abolish money. You know, I would say abolish government monopoly on money, which yes. We pretty much have. And that's not clear to a child of the difference of the different types of money and the difference between money and currency and, you know, units of exchange. And you just think of money as this paper, you know, more and more. I don't know if we're going to get around this, but we have a show note about the death of money, you know, the death of paper money and coins, to the point where, like, it, you know, it's going away to the point where people have been, you know, Walmart has called the police on people some places, or a clerk at Walmart, for someone trying to hand them a $100 bill. They didn't know what it was, and they thought it was, you know, it had to be counterfeit. And to the point where, you know, if you pay for things in $20 bills now, people think you're a drug dealer, which is weird, you know, if you don't use a credit card.
You know, I wonder if this is part of why they're making it essentially monopoly money with all of the colors. I mean, it's already monopoly money, essentially, but I wonder if this is why they're making it multicolored, because everybody's so used to the monochrome dollar, and now when you give somebody a blue $100 bill, they're just what is this?
Yeah
See, I thought it was I always
anti
thought it was,
counterfeiting, but
yeah, well, no, I that's the, you know, that's what the stated purpose of it is, but I always kind of thought, because there somebody made a meme of that when they first changed the color scheme on all the bills. And they matched it up with the Monopoly money and how the color schemes match. And it was, I just kind of ran under the assumption it was like they were just pretty much like being open about it now. It's like, yeah, this stuff is completely worthless. Wow. You're just going to keep taking it.
And they probably hired some, you know, outside consultant on colors to come in and do that and paid them six figures. And they probably went home and really stumped on it. And their kid was playing Monopoly. And they're like, oh, there we go. No worms.
Exactly. It's
worms.
It could be something as simple as that.
Yeah. It could.
Worms.
Yeah. Worms. Squirms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 5th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, starting Thursday, June 22nd, and going through Monday, June 26th. That's right, Liberty Fest is getting longer and stronger. There will be presentations, discussions, bacon duels, and outdoor activities in an environment that is both family and grown-up friendly. There will be special appearances by Jeffrey Tucker, Dana Martin, and a few of the Freedom Fiends. If you have only talked about what a free society would look like, this is your chance to live it and see it with your own eyes. Now round up your friends and family and get them registered today at mplfest.org. And there's a discount for paying with Bitcoin. That's mplfest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Because that's good. Yeah.
I like it.
And you're next. Man. You're next, Jeremy. You're up. So.
Yeah, you get to be embarrassed now.
Yeah, but I got some more new good news. So we have two new fiends starting. One is Sean Vibes, who's a great guy. And the other is this guy I found who sounds pretty cool. His name's Nima Vidati. He's going to start doing shows soon. And I think it'll work out. I've checked out some stuff he's done. I've talked to him, and he seems like a great guy. And I'm really happy that we're going to have this guy, Nima Vidati, joining the show.
No, I've never heard of that guy. He must be a total noob, right?
No, man. He's been a voluntarist for like 15 years or 14 years, but he just, you know, he's busy. He's got two kids and three jobs. And I'm going along with the joke. I know you know that.
Oh, okay.
I'm playing the joke. Nima Vidati started this show with me. He was the first several hundred shows of the Freedom Fiends 5.5 or 6 years ago were Nima and I and no one else. And it was then he had to go away. He actually, what happened was we were only two times a week, and we were on radio, and it was Saturday and Sunday morning, like noon Central Time, which we're still on, but it's usually a replay now, which is fine because we're on different stations from the weeknight shows, so completely different people hear it. But he was paternity leave. He left for like 6 or 8 weeks when his wife had their first kid, you know, a little bit before and then some time after, so he could spend more time with her. And during that time, I'd been doing this other podcast because I wanted to do more than two a week. So I was doing Michael Dean After Dark, which was essentially the Freedom Fiends. And it was Diana and it was Lou and a few other people that are still on. And so I had them come and do the Freedom Fiend show on the radio with me, and they were really jazzed about it. And then Nima finally said, like, man, I don't know, I could maybe do one show a week. And I wanted to go to seven times a week at that time. And so I just started doing the Proto Fiends, which was Michael Dean After Dark, which was the same slot as this show. I mean, on some of the stations we're on, it still says Michael Dean After Dark schedule. Yeah. Yeah, and radio works at, you know, the speed of cold molasses downhill, so I don't even bother, you know. And a lot of them have, Freedom Fiends, but have a picture of Neem and I. So it'll be great to have them back. It's going to be good.
Yeah, man. Awesome.
All right. So I used up some time, so you don't have to be quite as embarrassed for as long, but we'll probably bring it into the next segment. So,
yeah.
Jeremy, show me on the doll where you used to be a statist. What and when did you say what?
Well, I was a horrible statist in a lot of ways, but I think the two most significant ones was I was one of those people that just gave up on everything and actually screamed the phrase, I don't care if they did anything wrong or not, turn the whole Middle East into a parking lot.
Never did that, man.
Yeah, after 9/11, I was mad. I mean, my cousin died.
Wow.
My cousin worked in the tower.
Oh,
so
really?
I was mad. Wow. I was mad. I mean, I was still, yeah, I was still a ridiculously progressive liberal at that point, but I became a neocon in that regard.
Yeah. Liberals became neocons after that.
True.
Like, Bush had like, you know, 85% backing at some
afterwards
point, or something really
yeah,
high,
some
like absurdly high,
yeah,
like
this is true,
higher than anybody except Obama in his first year, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe even higher, because I think that a lot of liberals backed Bush because he was, you know, turning the Middle East into glass.
Yeah.
Or trying.
Yeah. So that was something I uttered more than a handful of times.
Wow.
And that's
quite an admission, man. That's brave.
And the other one, which I believe I touched on this when I was on with Randy last week. There was a point when I first started my company that I wanted to be all on the up and up. And I wanted to make sure that I was doing everything because I recognized it was a mostly female driven industry, and I figured for a male to make a mark in this thing, I had to make sure I was like professional. So I went out and got, you know, insurance and a dishonesty bond, and I took courses, and I went to look for a business license, and I found out that there wasn't a business license for my industry. And instead of saying, "Oh, this is great, I don't have to deal with this extra hassle," I actually said, "What do you mean there's not a license for my industry? Can we make one? Like, what's going on here?" I actually went so far as I was going to petition my representative to bring this up in
wow.
Yeah, I actually wanted them to create.
They probably would have. They probably would have.
Of course they would have.
I mean, if they have one citizen that says we need another bit of government, they can go in and say, "See, the people are clamoring. One out of one people want this."
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Everyone.
So yeah, that was
100%.
To me, I mean, as horrible as the turn the Middle East into a parking lot thing is bad, like to me that with the business license was even more egregious. I was like, the fact that I was that horrible, like I was demanding them to put shackles on me.
Wow.
That I wanted to have
you'd be
pay
more
extra
legit.
Money. Yeah, so I had to pay extra money just so I, you know, like, that's
yeah,
bad,
we'll
man.
Be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
We're live. I know it. I know we're live. That kind of sounds like Bart Simpson when he dances.
That is very true.
Yeah, I just realized that. That's Jeremy doing that, right?
Usually.
No, that was me.
That's how it was.
I've heard Jeremy do it. I have a cat that I call Bart because he's such a brat sometimes. Bob. I called him Bart by accident one day. It just kind of makes sense. Speaking of things we regret that have come out of our mouths, I don't regret that, but...
Bartholomew.
We're doing confession here. We're doing libertarian confession. We're talking about things we said that were stupid that we don't say anymore. And yeah. Jeremy talked about how when he first started getting into dog walking, he wanted to get a license and was sad to upset to find out there was no licensure. And
yeah, angry. Yeah,
wanted them angry. To make one. Yeah.
Yes.
So, you know, basically you wanted, and you said, what was the reason for that? Restate that about women.
Oh, yeah.
Women. It's not women.
Darn women. No, yeah. When I started out in my industry, I found out very quickly that it was
dog
very
walking.
Dominated. Well, pet sitting in general. It was very dominated by women. And it just, to me, it made sense. Like, more people are naturally inclined to trust a woman in their home. Like, that's why a lot of housekeepers are women. You know, it's like, it just... something that most people do. So it made sense to me that, especially me who usually had a shaved head and a goatee and had tattoos, it made sense that I looked as professional as I possibly could. So I wanted to make sure that I had everything that they could possibly give me.
You wanted a paper to prove you're as good as a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
As trustable. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I have paper.
So yeah. So as far as saying things, the thing about the Middle East were probably my two worst. But you know, and then I've talked about it before. But you know, the fact that I used to carry one of those stupid pocket constitutions and then read it to my kids as a bedtime story.
Wow. Like, hey, there's worse, man. That's a stepping stone. You know, I mean, that's.
I think that could be qualified as child abuse, Michael. I'm
child
not
abuse.
Sure.
I think not as much as being a statist. Here's the thing. For the people are going, wait, what? The Constitution's good. I know there are people saying that. So I have at least three reasons, I think, why the Constitution isn't good. First is the utilitarian reason. Like, it doesn't help. Really rarely, you know, you might get by with a Fourth Amendment, you know, challenge in court or something, but for the most part, every one of the amendments has been broken. All the time, every day. We actually, Neem and I did a show one time called, we did one called How the State Breaks the Ten Commandments Every Day. And we went through the Ten Commandments of the Bible and talked about how all of the government, and especially the law enforcement part, breaks every single commandment all day, every day. But so the Constitution doesn't work. Secondly, when people say, I love the Constitution, they usually mean the Bill of Rights. They ignore the part, you know, that creates the government and says the government can do whatever it wants. You know, in the, what's that called? It's near the beginning. The public welfare. What's the name of it? Personal welfare, private welfare.
Oh, yeah.
The welfare clause. I think it's called the welfare clause. Yeah. Which basically says the government can do whatever it needs. It also says that the government can tax to raise money for whatever it needs and doesn't put any zero whatsoever
what is it?
Conditions on that, other than the idea of representatives, which is doesn't really do anything. It kind of slows it down, I think, which is good.
Well, but even the idea of representatives, even if you're going to believe the hype that is the Constitution, as far as I'm concerned, even the hallowed founders that a lot of people are so enamored with, even they admitted that this system was not designed to work beyond a certain amount of people. Like, the fact that there's almost a million
people in America at the time.
But there's under one representative, as far as the local stuff. Like, there's so many more people. Like, it was never designed to work under those conditions.
Well, when the Constitution was written, there were a million people in America. Now there are a million people in jail in America. Think about that. There's there's 3 or 4 million in the system, meaning they're in jail or they're on probation or parole.
Yeah, I thought there was at least 2 million actually physically in jail, but I may be wrong about that.
Wow. Maybe.
I may be wrong. So.
Yeah. So the other thing about the Constitution is you didn't sign it. And the idea that you were born into this, therefore you have to live under it, is a soft form of slavery. You know, it's a contract you didn't sign, and that's the definition of slavery, of being forced to abide to conditions you didn't agree to. And it's built in government schools of, like, this is how it works, and it's the best system in the world. It's not perfect, but we say it's the best system in the world. I mean, every school child can parrot all of those things and believe them because they've been told. And, you know, start looking at it.
Exactly. And the people who still argue for it, that's the arguments they make, even as adults, because that's all they know. I mean, I can't count the number of times I've had to say to somebody in the middle of an argument, like, can you actually present a thought to me here? Because all you're doing is regurgitating what you learned in school, because that's all they're doing. I mean, I went through that, you know, talking.
I saw an Oscar Wilde quote about quoting people the other day that I will quote. It was something, I'm paraphrasing, but it's something effective, like, you know, most people are other people. Most people never say or do anything that they came up with. It's all, you know, kind of a mishmash of parroting other people. But so we talked about why it was dumb that you wanted licensure when you didn't need any. Mm-hmm. But can one of you tell the listeners succinctly how protections of industry, you know, without the government, how would you get a doctor that wouldn't kill you every time? You know, how would you get an electrician that wouldn't burn down your house with his wiring? How would you get a dog walker that wouldn't lose your dog or sell him to scientific research?
Well, you can still have some form of licensure, even, or something, like, you know, you can have rating systems that exist now in different capacities. Like, think of Amazon, like people rate their products and all that stuff. Like, or even the Better Business Bureau or stuff like that. Like, that's not a government agency; it's a private agency. Stuff like that. Consumer Reports, something that exists right now. You know, it's
Underwriters Laboratories.
Yeah, thank you. That's the one. You know,
a lot of people think the Better Business Bureau is government, but it's private. So if a business ever will not give you satisfaction, you can feel good about going to the Better Business Bureau and filing a report. You're not snitching. It's not the government.
Yeah, and you're using what I and many people I know would envision existing in a free society. Those type of systems just being used more. And, you know, because it's the Bastiat quote about the socialist, but it applies to pretty much everybody who believes in government, as far as I'm concerned. Like when we the capitalists or whoever it is that, you know, we are, say that we don't want government doing, the socialists naturally assume that we don't want it done at all, which is just not the case. Like, people would still want that. I know I would still want to feel comfortable about the doctor I'm going to if I needed surgery or something for my child. You know, I know that, you know, if I'm going to have somebody in my home doing work, I want to know that they're qualified to a certain extent. So I know I would be quite happy to pay for stuff like that. And instead of forcing people to pay for a monopolized version of it, you can have multiple options where people can go and voluntarily agree to pay to have these things done. It, you know, why wouldn't that work? I don't know.
When the internet started too, it was a lot worse. It was a lot easier for people to trick online rating systems, but they've gotten really, really good at it, at detecting it now. So, you know, reviews on Amazon are probably people, you know, it says if the person's actually bought the product, and it's getting a lot harder to like pretend to be someone else to have sock puppet accounts and get away with it. Because I mean, they even do things like you can use, you know, a different browser and a different IP with a VPN and look like you're in a different country. And like, you know, from what I've heard, like Google and Amazon can tell it's you. They do it with things like, you know, the machine number, the Mac number of your machine. They do it with your habits of like looking at this site, then looking at that site, then looking at this site, and then looking at that site. Like four of those in a row, they can pretty much determine it's you, you know?
There's also something to be said about just consumer responsibility. Because especially in modern day, when we have these tools, we have the internet and everything, it's not that difficult to research the product you're buying, even if it is, you know, a doctor. You can look into, well, where did they get their degree? Is it a legitimate thing? And what kind of competence can I expect from this person? But a lot of the issues with stuff like licensing and even things like unions, it goes into the same thing, is just this consolidation of responsibility only on the producer. But when you do that, then you squash innovation, you squash entry into the market, and you kill lower entry of additional competition.
It's also gotten more universal around the world that people expect governments and courts and things to protect them rather than to take care of themselves. Like in 1996, 97, 98, I was dating this woman in San Francisco who was from, she was Italian and Swiss, and she was from Switzerland. And she, you know, wanted to come to America, wanted to work. She was actually an illegal immigrant. Yes, I was dating an illegal immigrant. I actually considered marrying her at one point after we broke up because we're still good friends. But I did not, you know, and it would have been for love, of course, for anyone that's listening. But when she first moved to America, I met her not long after, and she would see signs like, you know, she'd say, you know, there's a sign that says caution, floor is wet. And then it says like, you know, slipping danger. And she said, why do they have to put slipping danger? In my country, they do not do this. And, you know, caution, coffee may be hot. And although, you know, that thing about the woman getting burned with the coffee and that's an example of an absurd lawsuit is absurd, because they actually handed her practically boiling coffee and it was way hotter than it was supposed to be. And she had third degree burns and required multiple surgeries. So, and she asked McDonald's to just pay her medical bills and they said, no way. So, you know, that's why it says caution, maybe hot on coffee now. But she couldn't believe the number of signs she would encounter in a week telling her things, you know, do not step on top, you know, the thing that folds out on the ladder where you put the paint.
Yeah.
She said, like, you know, in Switzerland, they don't have this, but now they do, you know, like this, you know, this many years later, that stuff's everywhere, you know, because governments and basically because lawyers can sue for things that probably wouldn't be able to sue for without a lot of government protection.
Sure.
Well, some of that also might just be bleed through from having it come from other markets that require those things. So some of that might also be imports from America that does have to do that anyway.
That's true. Yep.
Worms.
World's getting smaller, but it's getting bigger at the same time.
Oh, I love a good paradox.
Think about it during the break.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Was that rough? Rough. I like your bark. Phil.
I like your bark, Phil. There's one for you, Travis.
It's going to be a tree. A meme about a tree, I think. All right. So in the final redemption in the third act here, we want to talk about someone who went, I hate to use the word nutty, but so there's this guy named Julian Hecklin, who is 86 years old, I believe, who's been... In the interview we're going to speak of, he says he's been doing jury nullification for 70 years. I don't know about that, but he's been doing it for decades. And he is someone I've really looked up to a lot. Jury nullification, for those that don't know, is jury nullification outreach, is standing in front of courthouses generally, handing out pamphlets to people going in the court who may be potential jurors, telling them about the fact that they, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to say for sure, but the pamphlets are telling them that they have the right to judge the law as well as the facts in the case. In other words, if there's overwhelming evidence that yes, this person had a gun in New York State that has 7 bullets in it instead of 6, and that is a felony in New York State, and they get caught with it.
Now, hey, now, they raised it back up to 10.
Oh. Wow. Okay, so they have, let's say, a 12-round mag in New York, and they're arrested for that, which people are, and New York actually put up signs saying, snitch on your neighbors and we'll pay you $500, which actually worked out to 20 pieces of silver at the current rate at that time. So the jury can and sometimes does say, you know, not guilty, even when it's obvious the person had this thing in possession, because the jury believes that the law shouldn't be a law. And that's a thing, and you can do that, and it works in New... It is done. I'm not going to say you can do it.
It is
in
done.
In New Hampshire, you can instruct the jury about it, that it's a possibility, and it has worked there.
Other states have now passed.
Which ones?
I can't remember offhand now, but I know other ones have also passed laws where, because apparently it is, I know in some states it's actually, the other ones, it's actually illegal to tell the to instruct the jury.
That's what I'm saying.
But other ones have made it since New Hampshire became better known for already having that established. I think they already had that in. I don't think they actually had that passed, which is insane, because it is. It's something that goes back to the common law courts of England,
right.
And the jury system. And when the whole jury system essentially started, like, that was one of the, you know, the quote unquote rights of the jury, is that you get to, like you said, judge the law, not just the person and whether they're guilty or innocent. And it's not
so
even
Julian
necessary.
Hecklin.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, because we don't have time for all this. So basically, jury nullification exists. Julian Hecklin has been kind of a hero of mine, because for a long time, for as long as I've known he existed, which is probably 6 or 7 years, because I've heard him talked about on, and I think interviewed on Free Talk Live. They're big friends and fans of his. you know, I've really looked up to this guy. I've thought, wow, that's cool. He's gone to jail for it. He's fled the country to avoid, you know, long-term prosecution. And apparently he's back and did an interview recently that we'll link in the show notes. What's the site called? Anyway,
Null and Void was his name.
No, that was the show. Article. Oh, that was the show. Yeah. So do you know Phil offhand?
No.
Doesn't matter. So it's kind of like a competitor. Radio Lab. It's kind of a competitor to NPR, actually.
Radio Lab actually has a lot of good stuff. Yeah,
they have a lot of good stuff, but it does kind of have a lefty bent sometimes, I've noticed. But they interviewed him, and in the middle of the interview, I think it's 35 minutes in, he just starts saying people should come and shoot the police and shoot the judges, and you know, basically, I think he was saying if he goes to jail, that should happen. I'm not sure.
If they try to arrest him and the people that are helping him, that's what it... He's basically saying there comes a time that you have to do that. Like, you can't...
And this is nutty. And almost like, I almost think that if I were a conspiratorial person, I'd think that the government has a drug they can put in somebody's soup that makes them go nutty at the end of their life so they can ruin their legacy. But I'm going to go with the legacy he had before that. And the bottom line I was trying to get to is you're not going to get to freedom by shooting your way there. You're going to get to freedom by creating more demand for liberty and less demand for government services. And you can do that by playing an episode of Freedom Fiends for your friends.
Worms.
Good show, guys. Worms.
Worms.
Worms. Back tomorrow night on the Freedom Fiends.